Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
The Initial Reaction Podcast, not quite coming at you live from Big Ten Media Day, but big time JP Kadoran, who of course was at Big Ten Media Day, is here. My name, though, is J.R. Radcliffe. I'm with Lake Country Publications and now newspapers.
I am the star of Big Ten Media Day. I can't believe how many interview requests I got, which was zero, by the way. But yeah, Big Ten Media Day happened yesterday as I was there for Time Warner Cable Sports Channel, which is my dear employer for the past 8.14 years. It was delightful.
Is it actually 0.14? Have you done the math on that? You probably have.
I haven't. When did I start? I started like June 8th. Today's July. Yeah, you go ahead. I'll do the math.
That's so not important. So yeah, we'll talk a little bit about the revelations. Of course, there were many at Big Ten Media Day, and that's sarcasm because there is usually not much other than a bunch of people talking about how optimistic they are for the season ahead. Speaking of the Big Ten.
Did I say 8.14?
You did. Tell me that's not accurate.
8.134.
Holy crap. That's incredible.
Like,
that's incredible.
Tomorrow, I would have been accurate.
That's I mean, I just, your accuracy is really never that spot on. That's incredible.
As of tomorrow, it is 0.1369, rounding up to 1.14. Anyway,
I'm proud of you and your math ability. So speaking of the Big Ten, JP.
You know, there's no news because maybe I'm just speaking to our industry in general. The only news is what we ask. You know, it's not like these guys volunteer any sort of information. It's always what we decide to ask about. And clearly we decided to ask the Badgers about their schedule and about opening with LSU and about Dare and Corey Clement in the backfield, and about Vince Beagle becoming a all-time great linebacker. So there's no news to come out of it. I guess something that was a shock was there was a report that Penn State accused Ohio State and Michigan of negative recruiting, so recruiting against Penn State, which is frowned upon, and then they denied it and said it wasn't an issue. So that was the only surprise. Other than that, it was just it was a great event to start the college football season for us up here in the upper Midwest.
So I was going to actually segue to something completely separate, but we'll keep talking about this in a second. I was going to say, speaking of the Big Ten, Ty Weber of Menominee Falls, great high school pitcher. He is currently at the University of Illinois taking summer classes. He'll be playing for Illinois next spring. He had an unbelievable.
I would really like to hear from him, though.
Okay, so you're saying you don't... Yeah, okay. So we'll, I did get a chance to talk to him. He had an unbelievable state tournament. I mean, for one thing, he pitched in the championship game. He held Marquette, awesome offense, one of the best offenses we've seen in summer baseball in a long time. Held them to four hits, complete game shutout. Menominee Falls won the state championship 2-0. It's a back-to-back state title situation. Weber was part of both teams, obviously. And the crazy thing about his season is it, and by the way, that doesn't even talk about his offense. He went 4-for-4 in the semifinal and drove in both of those two runs and the 2-0 win in the final. So he obviously contributed with his bat as well. But his summer has been insane. In the beginning of June, he was drafted by the Cincinnati Reds in the 34th round. He decided not to sign. He's not going to play for the Reds, but he wanted to get going on his Illinois career kind of early. So he went to Illinois kind of with the assumption that he wouldn't be pitching anymore this season, kind of by the midway point of the year. It seemed like, okay, his year is over. But then he did start driving back. He would drive 4 hours one way to pitch on the weekends. And then he came back for the sectional, which was on a Monday. He beat West Bend West, the number one team in the state, with a lengthy winning streak. Then he goes and pitches again. He goes back to Illinois for a couple days, comes back for the state championships on Friday, and delivers an all-time great performance in the same breath as like Evan Rollinger of West Bend, several years ago, and Tony Butler of Oak Creek, who was a freshman when he first pitched in the state championship game and ended up having an incredible career with the Knights, who won, I believe, 3 state titles with Tony Butler there. So just an awesome performance, legendary performance, and I had a chance to sit down and chat with him and talk all about his season and his great tournament run. My guest is Ty Weber, pitcher, senior, graduated from Menominee Falls High School with a couple state championships under his belt. He had a crazy day at Capco Park on Friday where he pitched a 4-hit shutout in the state championship game, helping Menominee Falls beat Marquette 2-0. He also had 6 hits over the 2 games. He had the 2 RBIs that gave Menominee Falls the edge in that championship game. He kind of did it all. Ty, was there anything you did not accomplish on Friday that you wish you had done?
Not really, no. I mean, the whole day was pretty spectacular. I mean, winning state is good enough, so I don't think nothing went bad, so that's, yeah.
How confident were you in that championship game, especially considering you had been here before, you guys won the state title last year, and that, I know for the Menominee Falls program, kind of got a big monkey off the back for a lot of the athletics programs there. They won a girls volleyball title not that long ago, but they haven't had a ton of success in the state final level anyway. How confident were you then in round two doing this again? Did that make it a little bit easier the second time around?
I think the game after we beat West Bend West, our whole team's confidence went out of the roof because they were ranked so highly, and we just knew we could beat anyone. And going into the state tournament compared to last year, we were kind of playing to try to win, and this year we're playing to defend our title, and I think our confidence is out of the roof. And as soon as we beat New Holstein to get to the championship game, I mean, I felt really confident that we had what it takes to win. So I think we're all confident, definitely.
So I want to talk about that West Bend West game a little bit, as well as the state games, but I'll rewind even a little bit further to the beginning of June when your summer really got crazy. You get drafted is it the 40th round, 44th round by the Cincinnati Reds?
34th
round. My bad. I'm sorry. Did not mean to downgrade you there. So you get drafted in the 34th round by the Cincinnati Reds. You have committed to participate at the University of Illinois in their summer program before you get going for the Illinois baseball team. So I'm guessing you're kind of weighing whether or not to sign, and you leave early for the summer classes, and there's some question about whether you'll be back at all to pitch for the Menominee Falls team. My understanding is you were driving back and forth pretty much 4 hours one way to get to these games. What was the decision-making process like deciding to come back at all to pitch for the high school team? Because I'm guessing Illinois gets a little bit of input there, and you're probably talking about it with your family and whatnot. I mean, what had to make that happen?
Well, we knew going into it, the coaches here can't really do much for it, like with us, because it's against the rules. So I knew classes ended on Thursday, and I just wanted to come back and play with the guys as much as I could. And one of the other roommates that I roomed with from Arrowhead is Ryan Schmidt, and we would carpool back and forth to make it easier on our parents. And I just tried to play every weekend I could, and it definitely worked out. I mean, the best it could, that's for sure.
I know they can't work with you, but they probably have a little bit of input about whether they're happy with you doing that. I mean,
yeah.
Was it contentious at all that you were coming back to pitch still for the high school team?
They were totally fine with it because, I mean, I wouldn't have gotten a lot of innings if I wouldn't have thrown. So I think they just liked me getting out there, playing as much as I can, getting innings, and just working on my game.
So then going back to getting drafted, I would imagine for a lot of guys, that deadline passing, that mid-July signing deadline, is kind of a relief because you don't have to worry about whether or not you're going to go one way or the other anymore. I don't know how you feel about that. How strongly did you consider the opportunity of starting minor league baseball in the Reds organization?
We definitely considered it, not to the point where we were going to sign like an agent or hire anyone. I knew that after signing up for all these summer programs and really getting a feel for the campus, being down here numerous times, I wanted to go here pretty much no matter what round I was drafted in. And it made it easier that it was later on in the round, so I can come here to hope for the best and try to bump up in the rounds.
So getting drafted in the 34th round, was it disappointing? Was it exciting? Like, how would you describe draft day?
It was definitely exciting because going into it, I only went to one case, which was the Reds, and I really did not expect to be drafted. And just getting the call during, like, lining up to for graduation, it was very exciting, that's for sure. I mean, it'll be a moment I'll remember for the rest of my life.
The sectional games, because you're talking about classes ending on Thursday and you can come up for the weekends, which is well and good. The sectional is on a Monday, so I'm guessing that had to be a special situation for you, particularly because you end up pitching this great game against West Bend West, which was picked, you know, they had a 20-some game winning streak. They were the top team in the state. What was that day like? Was it crazy? Did you have to leave right away to go back to Champaign? I mean, how did that day break down for you?
Yeah, well, after our game Friday, after we beat Kewaskum, I was a little excited because sectional is a doubleheader, and no matter what, I was going to end up missing class on Monday, which is always a nice thing. So after both sectional games, my family went home. Me and my dad packed, and he drove me right from there. From our house to Champaign at around 8 o'clock. We got to campus at around midnight on Tuesday morning, and then I just ended up waking up like 5 hours later and then going right to work out. So it was definitely a busy day. It was exhausting, but it was totally worth it. I mean, you can't really take it away. It's really nice.
Yeah, at least you had the whole beating West Bend West as badly as you did to think about that. I mean, that's got to surprise you, right? Even though I'm sure you guys are fairly confident to beat a team. I don't remember the final score offhand. I think it was like 10-4 to beat a team of that caliber that badly, especially I know you guys kind of went out earlier in the Greater Metro Tournament than you probably would have liked. I mean, at that point, I'm sure you figure, well, we're as good as any team out there, certainly.
Yeah. Well, I knew going into the game that West Bend West was going to be a pretty good team, and from what we saw earlier in the year, I mean, their record was out of the roof. And we just tried to go into the game and just play our game, and big innings really helped us this year, and once we tacked on a couple of runs and a couple of hits, it just seemed like in the inning, hits never stopped, and it definitely didn't. In like the fifth or sixth inning, we put up about like 7 runs, and I think just that inning alone really made a difference, and our confidence went out of the roof and their confidence went down, because I'm sure during the year they never experienced a big inning like that or being down so much. So I think that really helped us out.
Then in the state semifinal against New Holstein, it's easy to speculate that you would not be the guy pitching in that game, because New Holstein is the one team from one of the four sectionals where they typically haven't stacked up against the Milwaukee area teams. It seems logical that Menominee Falls, if they have an ace like you, would save them until the championship game, just kind of go for the whole thing and not necessarily just to get to the final. Was there any discussion that you would pitch that first game, or was that a pretty much a foregone conclusion?
I think it was a pretty foregone conclusion, because Logan Roble, who threw in sectionals, threw 7 innings and gave up only 1 run, and I think he was a perfect guy to throw against him because he really knows how to pitch. And, I mean, against a team like New Holstein, who probably hasn't seen like greater metro teams like us, and I think Logan, him throwing 7 innings really saved our pitching. That's for sure.
And Marquette has maybe one of the best hitting lineups that we'll ever see in summer baseball. They've just got an unbelievable lineup, yet you strike them out 9 times, hold them to 4 hits, gave up 2 walks, went the full 7. You've faced them before this year, so you had a little bit of intel on them. Did you have enough intel to like individually understand how to take down each batter? I mean, how much information did you have to attack Marquette? Did you feel comfortable having seen them a couple times before that you could pick them apart like this?
I think seeing them once this year and not throwing my best game. I mean, granted, we only played 5 innings against them. The game I threw, I think throwing against them a couple of times to each batter really helped out in our game, so I knew which guys I succeeded against the last game and how I should attack them, and I mean, just keep going with what's working, and obviously, I mean, it worked out. So
this team, I don't know how you guys looked at yourselves at the beginning of the year. You were certainly, I believe you were number one in the preseason rankings, which jumped around a ton over the course of the summer season. Was this a surprise for you guys to come back and win the whole thing, or is this really where you guys envisioned you would be at the beginning of the season?
I think in the beginning of the year, we envisioned ourselves being able to make it to state, just looking at who we had And during the year, I wasn't around the team enough to get a vibe, but I, from what I've heard, some days we were really down and did not know where our season would end up, and some days we'd come up with a huge win and our confidence would be out of the roof. I mean, I think all year we really thought that we had the experience, and after last year, we could make it back. Once we got past sectionals, I think everyone knew that there's no looking back, and it was our championship again. So,
have you had a chance to really think about your individual performance that day, to go 4-for-4 against New Holstein, 2 RBIs against Marquette? With the, I mean, that's it's crazy when you break it down. They're probably... there may not be anyone who's had as good a state championship, a state tournament as you had. How do you look at it? Is it just something that came that you expected could be what your contribution could be? Or, I mean, this, it's kind of heady stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, I look on it a little bit, but I just try to stay as humble as I can. And I mean, I work on my game a lot, so I try to do as best as I can. And I don't expect myself to do so well, but it was definitely a really exciting day for me, I'd say.
As you head into your career now at Illinois, hard not to imagine, especially somebody who's been drafted once, that the ultimate goal will be to get drafted again. You do have a couple years before that can happen for you. Is it something that you're allowing yourself to think about, that the ultimate goal is to work yourself into a position where you can be drafted by a major league team, or is that just now too far in the distance, 2 or 3 years in the distance, that you're not able to really give that much thought anymore?
I think it's in the picture. I mean, I definitely want to move up in the draft. And I think coming here with the coaches provided and a really nice pitching coach here, Drew Dickinson, I hope me and him can work together a lot, and I put some velocity on my fastball and learn how to throw my secondary pitches a little better and just see what happens. I mean, it's definitely a dream of mine to get drafted a lot higher, and just, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what all happens.
I know you're not there at school anymore, but what does this mean to Menominee Falls? The lid is kind of off here after that girls volleyball title a couple years ago. It was really the first time they'd broken through forever to take a state title.
Yeah.
Now back-to-back baseball championships. This is old hat for you guys now, huh?
Yeah. The vibe in the town is definitely very eccentric. I mean, everyone's excited. Everyone who we see is always congratulating us, and I think it just brings a lot of life to the high school and the community all in one. So,
all right, Ty, well, congratulations. Good work on all this great stuff, and we'll definitely be watching for you in the future.
Thank you very much.
And if you do not believe what Mr. Radcliffe has told you, if you do not believe what Mr. Weber just said, you can catch the replays of those final games on Time Warner Cable Sports Channel this Thursday at 9:30 a.m. and Friday at 7 p.m. because we broadcasted those games. The semifinals are on at some point throughout the week, and we have replays of the championship Thursday morning and Friday evening. So there you go.
You know, Menominee Falls is kind of neighbors Germantown, and for a while there, it felt like Falls was sort of cursed, like not the little brother of Germantown. They're not really quite that level of rivalry, although it is a pretty good rivalry. But it just felt like they could not get out of that shadow. While Germantown was doing really well in all sorts of sports, boys basketball most notably, they went to the state championship game in football, and Falls just couldn't get on track. Like, they went a long time without any team titles, and mentioned it in the interview, the girls volleyball team won a few years ago, and now the baseball team has won back-to-back. It really feels like that high school has broken through, and they had JP Tokido on the basketball team a few years ago, and it felt like that was sort of going to be the breakthrough, and it didn't quite work out. They didn't quite make it to state. So this is a really big thing for that community, for Menominee Falls High School, and Ty Weber is going to be remembered as one of the great athletes the school has ever seen.
Yeah, that timeline is nuts of driving back and forth and getting drafted. I know I had tried to talk to him on camera right after he got drafted, because I tried to round up all the local kids. And I talked to his coach, and he's like, yeah, he's in Champaign right now. I'm like, wait, what? He's drafted and still playing baseball for you? It's like, no, he's not here today. I'm like, all right, I will alter my plans then.
Yeah, it was a crazy year, and he talked about it. He rooms with Arrowhead pitcher Ryan Schmidt, whose season was over because Arrowhead now plays spring baseball. So they're roommates at Illinois and carpooling back just constantly. And I mean, I don't know how many people have driven, I think it's I-57 to go south into Illinois. Like, that is a boring, boring drive. That is a very numbing experience driving across the Illinois countryside in southern Illinois. It's a lot like, you know, central Wisconsin. There's just not a lot to see. So, very interesting summer for him, and certainly a great way to finish it.
Yeah, that'll be on next week's podcast. The worst stretches of road that we've ever driven. That'll be a good topic. Lots of listener feedback on that one.
Are there any good stretches of highway? Like, at some point, highways, yes, just, they're all bad.
Oh, my God, no. I-17 in Arizona, going from Phoenix to Flagstaff, it's majestic.
Okay, sure. So when you get onto the coastline or in the mountains or something, it's a different
story. You know
what?
I would also say, even, like, if we're talking Wisconsin, favorite stretches of highway. Are we going to do this week? Is that what's going on? Favorite stretch of highway.
You're the one who took us here, man. I was not going to spend time on this.
151 by Platteville. Absolutely love it.
I'm going to take your word for it, bud, because I don't think I've even driven that stretch of road. Certainly not in the last 10 years. Why would I go to Platteville? I'm sorry. I'm a southeastern bumpkin. I don't often leave the area, JP. I have children. I don't often leave my house.
That is crazy to me.
No,
94 up by Toma, or up past Toma, a little Camp Douglas area. No, there's Menominee.
Yeah, that's
have you been
stuff,
to Menominee?
Menominee Falls.
No.
I know. No, I've not been to Menominee in many, many years.
Jeez.
I was looking ahead to the football schedule, though. Menominee plays Greendale. They come to Greendale for Thursday night. That's one of the Thursday night openers. Of course, Arrowhead Homestead, which is rife with storylines, including former Homestead coach Fritz Rauch, now coaching at Arrowhead. That's going to be a thing on Thursday night, that first Thursday. That's, what is that, August 18th? I think we're 21 days away from that?
And you know what other former coach will be on Arrowhead sidelines?
That would be one Tom Taraska, who won four state championships with Arrowhead. He's the linebackers coach now. That's a little embarrassment of riches for the Arrowhead football program.
Little bit.
So let's jump back to the Big Ten, the Big Ten Media Day that was in Chicago, a two-day extravaganza. You said
Going, well, that's a thing. Like, this is, it's a huge event on our calendar because we cover college football well-ish. It's a big deal, and we can go and get a lot of content for the, you know, the, to kind of roll out over the next couple weeks, do our preview stories. But I'm curious how much people care, about it being a media day and about any of these storylines that go on. So, like, for you, as a journalist who doesn't really cover a lot besides high school, which is delightful, you know my stance on that as well, but, like, you don't cover the Badgers. I know you like the Badgers, I think, right?
Sure, of course.
So how much do you care about this?
I'm speaking as a fan. I can say unequivocally, I care 0%. I will listen to 0% of the interviews unless it happens to be on in the background. I'm not going to tune in for any piece of information gleaned from those interviews,
yeah,
because it's all so, like, surface and just, like, season preview-y, and there's nothing there.
Yeah, like, you don't want to hear about, like, Michigan State being underrated or Ohio State reloading or Harbaugh in a rap video or any of that, right?
Right. And I actually like Jim Harbaugh because he sort of, I think, recognizes what foolishness it is. I mean, understand it's part of the job, but he sort of just treats it as an opportunity to say something weird or be weird, which I like.
Yeah, and I had never, I mean, I haven't really watched any of his press conferences ever. I've obviously read stories and seen sound bites, but to watch just him for 15 minutes was weird because he's so quiet. Oh, God, who does he remind me of? Of just somebody, I'm thinking of somebody, I can't think of who. He's just really, like, kind of spaced out. Like, he's almost, like, looking through people and not really there, and he'll just be talking, and then all of a sudden he'll realize he has a chance to make a terrible, like, dad joke, and he'll take the chance. Like, he was talking about his rap video that he was in, which I didn't even know about. Apparently he was in a rap video, and it's awful, by the way. And he was talking about it, and then at the end of it, he goes, I guess all the cool kids liked it. And obviously the room busted out in laughter because you don't hear, compare him to Kirk Ferentz, who doesn't say anything besides we want to get better every single day, you know? Like, yeah, he's so mundane and boring. And then all of a sudden you hear a coach say, all the cool kids liked it, I guess. Like, that's incredible. So that was weird to kind of watch him. But, yeah, I mean, so I'm glad that you said that, because I think that there isn't a lot of attention. I think it's just a lot of kind of journalistic self-importance with media days. It's like, oh, this is a huge day. Well, no, it's not.
If there was anything newsworthy, it would be on Twitter, and it would be within 140 characters. It would be that like level of news, and so it would be fine.
And I think there are. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, in a way, I kind of love that Harbaugh sort of has to recognize that on some degree. He's thinking, look, kids don't care about the mundane. We just got to get better. Kids don't care. Like, they're not watching that and thinking, wow, I really want to play for Kirk Ferentz. So I'm going to stand out. I'm going to do something weird and kids can't help but like it. You know, maybe that's like a slight edge. If you got somebody choosing between Michigan and Iowa, they're going to go with the guy who's a little bit more of a character. That is sort of the day and age where this stuff, maybe this stuff mattered 10 years ago, where the access was limited, and it's still limited, but it's not, there's just constant little tiny updates. You know, if somebody hurts their knee in practice, that's out there immediately. You don't have to wait a few days for that to happen.
Yeah. So like actual news was that there's no timetable on TJ Edwards coming back now. That's the only Badgers news that came out. But there are Badger storylines. Like, the most fun I had was Sojourn Shelton. I talked to him about, they open up in LSU at Lambeau Field. Well, all of his teammates, 80% of his teammates have grown up dreaming of playing at Lambeau Field. He is not from here. He does not care about Lambeau Field.
Right. It's just another field.
So I was like, what stadium did you dream about growing up? And like, he didn't have an answer. He's like, I don't really know. The Miami Dolphins Stadium is the first one I ever saw and got to drive around. And in my head, I'm thinking, well, that's a gigantic dump of a stadium, so that's weird. And then he said, like, he was an Atlanta Falcons fan. And then he talked about the first playoff game for Michael Vick against the Packers. And I was like,
uh-oh.
Okay, maybe we need to talk about something else.
Uh-oh. You know?
So that was fun. And, I mean, there are lots of actual storylines going on. But none of that is actual news. None of that is things that came up. It's all just, questions that we asked them. So
we probably haven't been doing this long enough to really get perspective, but I wonder if press conferences have always been this buttoned up, knowing that the information is going to be out there immediately, so guys are much more attuned to not giving any sort of, knowing the context is going to be so limited, they just have to be so guarded about what they say and how they say it. And or maybe it's the opposite. Maybe guys should be more loose because stuff's going to be out there anyway. You might as well have fun with it. You might as well not try and guard all your information, because if you've got information to be, there's no guarding information anymore. So why not relax and just
let
it
go? And with that negative recruiting story too, like, I feel like there was even some context lost there because I watched it happen. All it was, you're in this enormous room with 500 plus writers. And the coach is up front on stage and at a podium. They have 15 minutes. Now, Kevin Wilson, nobody knows who that is. He's the head coach at Indiana. He got up. He has 15 minutes to talk.
I have to confess, I did not know who that was.
There you go. Why would you? Right. He spoke. He gave an opening statement. Guess how long it was? It's a 15-minute window for them to speak.
Yeah, I'm guessing it was about 5 minutes.
8.5.
Okay.
8.5 minutes. So then he got a couple questions. I know Paul Christ only got 5 questions because he speaks so slowly and deliberately.
Right.
Like
his
opening statement was only about 4 or 5 minutes, but then each answer took 2 minutes because he just kind of rambles. Anyway, the point of that was that this negative recruiting thing was like one of the last questions for, I'm trying to think who it was, probably Urban Meyer. It was Mark D'Antonio first. Like one of the last questions, some guy in the back of the room asked it, and it's not like that was a talking point of the media days. That was somebody's question that they wanted to address. He probably could have done it in a much different setting, because after this gigantic room, you go into a smaller room where everybody's at their own table and you can just go up to them. It should be one-on-one, but instead it's 14-on-1, and that's a much more relaxed environment for people to talk. He easily could have asked about it there, then he gets his story, but it's nowhere near a national story at all, because it's just him and like 8 other guys who heard it. So, that goes back to the original point of, I think that we're making a lot bigger deal out of this than it actually is.
Maybe. I just don't think it's a big deal at all. Like, I would not have known Big Ten Media Day was out there if I didn't know you were covering it. Honestly, like, that just isn't something that even registers on my radar. I'm guessing a lot of fans are the same.
Yeah. How big of a Badgers fan are you? Like, for instance,
you know, there are a lot of people who are just craving college football news right now. And they know that it's been SEC media days and it's been ACC and all the other leagues have gone through it. So I'm sure that, you know, if they're a diehard Badgers fan, they're like, okay, I can't wait till we actually get some sort of new stories out there.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm not as big a football guy. I'm a Badgers fan, but more of a basketball guy. So I can understand why others might be more involved.
So there you go.
The Milwaukee Brewers, JP, are sort of in the news.
Yeah.
We're coming up on the trade deadline. August 1st is the day to have moved pieces. There's already been some trade movement. Aroldis Chapman is now a member of the Chicago Cubs. Some chatter early this week, or actually midweek on Wednesday, that Jeremy Jeffress was available. That part isn't news, but that David Stearns might be asking a ton just for Jeremy Jeffress, who is the closer, but I don't know if I pretend that he's one of the best relief pitchers in baseball or anything, asking something in the neighborhood of a team's top prospect plus another player, which probably a reaction to the Chapman trade because the Yankees did receive so much in return. I don't know. I'm starting to wonder if the Brewers are actually going to trade these guys, because if they're asking that much, I mean, I love the optimism and I love the willingness to sort of go all in and know that you don't have to trade these guys, but I wonder maybe that is asking a little too much.
Yeah, I think there's a few things to boil down here. First of all, that's their asking price on Wednesday. You know, the deadline is either Sunday or Monday. I don't even know, because it's normally July 31st, right? But I keep hearing this year it's pushed back a day.
Because July 31st lands on a weekend, so
Sunday, yeah,
right? On Sunday. So they want it to be when business is open on a weekday, so it
really
always rolls over to the next weekday. Yeah, that has happened before. It happens a lot.
Okay, so that's their asking price on Wednesday. The deadline is Monday. Thank you for clearing that up, buddy. I think that price will come down, and I think it doesn't hurt to have your price be high. Another layer to that, I love, absolutely love that he's doing this. He doesn't need to trade Jeremy Jeffress. He doesn't need to trade Jonathan Lucroy, although that one is probably the one that he should trade the most. But he doesn't need to trade Will Smith or Ryan Braun. He can keep these guys. And it's not a problem. So there's no problem, from my mind, of keeping this asking price high.
Yeah, I agree with you. I do feel like LaCroix is a must trade at this moment in time. A, because his value is so high. I read one website, The Ringer, where they pointed out that he is probably the number one piece that you can get in a trade right now, just because of his value as a catcher, his value as a good hitter. I mean, he's what a lot of teams crave right now, particularly the Indians, who lost Yan Gomes for a significant amount of time, probably could be out for the year, it's hard to tell, and they could still keep him then for the following season since he remains under contract. I mean, teams like the Astros have been involved, the Rangers have been interested, there was talks with the Mets allegedly one for one at one point with Travis d'Arnaud, which sounded like the Brewers would have gotten the short end of that deal. But I do think that you're going to get the most for him now and not in the offseason. So even though he is still cheap and everything and a great player, and it would stink to lose him at any point, I do think now has to be the time.
Yeah,
and
but
I guess what? Oh, go ahead.
But now versus later, right now there's only four or five teams that could use him. In the offseason, there's theoretically about 15 to 20 teams that could be in on him.
Yeah, I guess I still feel like though, I feel like the 15 teams are going to be a little less motivated because they don't know where they're going to stand as far as the playoffs go. You got a team like the Indians, like they know that they're first in the AL Central. If they don't make a move now, that could really cost their chances of actually getting to the playoffs.
Like, I think he's worth the most right now. For the obvious reasons, just like, well, you get him for the most games if you're that team that's trading for him. But I just think the way that he's playing, the way that he's almost he's a known commodity at this point. You don't know how he's going to come out of the offseason and into next year. But I think he's worth a lot right now. That one I understand. But like Will Smith isn't a free agent until 2019. Jeremy Jeffress isn't a free agent until 2020. There's no need for them to trade any of those guys. But I'm all for it because with relievers, how long is their shelf life? You know, I mean, how long are you seriously going to be dominant? Aroldis Chapman is so much of an outlier that he's been able to do this as long as he has. And we know why. It's because it's 105 miles an hour. That's why he's been able to hold on. Does anybody have any sort of long-term belief that Jeremy Jeffress is going to be able to convert 22 out of 26 saves every first half of the season? I mean, I certainly don't. I think he's done really well, but I don't necessarily need to sharpie him into my future plans.
I totally agree with that. Relievers are just so unpredictable. You move when they're having a good year.
Yeah.
I happen to think, even though Will Smith has struggled a little bit lately, I happen to think that he's going to be great for a long time. I don't know if I have that same confidence in Jeffress, but he's been pretty good for a little while now, and I am not against them trading anybody. I just think that, like you said, with the contracts the way they are, I mean, those guys are going to be assets for a while yet, and yeah. That might be for the next great Brewers team, and it might be for somebody else. We don't know yet how the Brewers are going to evolve, but those guys, at least, like, you can ask for the moon because it isn't crucial that you trade them, and I still think you ask for the moon with LaCroix because he's so valuable, but I do think that this is the time to move him. I guess what's surprising, too, is after, I know I keep coming back to that Adam Lind trade, but David Stearns has demonstrated that he's cool with guys that are 18, 19 years old and returns for a trade return. So I'm surprised that he's thinking, I mean, I'm guessing he's saying, you know what, we've got the depth now in our minor league system. We had such a busy offseason. Now we're going for guys who are going to be big-time contributors in the very near future, as
the rumor,
next year.
Yeah, the rumor, the tweet that was circling on Wednesday was that the asking price for Jeffress was an organization's number one prospect and then one or two other mid-level guys, which is just fantastic. So good for him. I hope he gets it, and I don't know. We'll see what happens. We have till the weekend. The only other thing about Jeffress, talking about his success, you know, potential long-term success, the only thing that has derailed his career has been his off-the-field mistakes. You know, when it comes to on-the-field mistakes, he only had, what, that 1 week with Toronto where they had to cut him after he had, like, three appearances and, like, an ERA of 12. That's been, like, the only hiccup he's had. So yep. I might be able to buy into some long-term success because we haven't seen a ton of failure from him.
Yeah, I'll be interested too if there is a lot of action for Ryan Braun. I still think he's worth more to the Brewers than he is in a trade, even when we're talking about the future Brewers. But that remains to be seen. I mean, maybe he gets a really big gig or a really big return out of that. Maybe he's part of a package with these relievers. Maybe Braun and LaCroix go together. I mean, who knows? There are a lot of possibilities
out
there.
So who gets traded? So this is your final prediction, your final podcast before the trade deadline. Who is gone?
Yes. I think John LaCroix will definitely be gone. And I think it's the Indians who will end up getting him, and it probably won't be for an organization's top prospect and another couple, but I think it could be a top couple. I think it'll be for two solid prospects, two top 10 prospects in an organization. I think that makes sense. It's never what you think. You know, like Gerardo Parra can get you Zach Davies.
Yeah.
And then you got guys that you think might be more valuable that don't return nearly the same level. It's very interesting to me how this all works. And it's all about timing.
Adam Lind versus Jason Rogers and the difference that those two guys brought in.
Oh, totally.
I will go with LaCroix. I think he will be gone this week. And I think I'm going to go with Will Smith leaves as well. I'm going to say LaCroix and Smith might as well go two separate deals, helping two separate teams. And I think Jeffress and Braun both stay.
The Aroldis Chapman deal has me thinking that relievers are definitely going to be dealt in separate deals because of the return that one guy can get you. Obviously, the Brewers wouldn't be getting that return for any of their pieces, but they could be getting a lot, especially for Will Smith, who's left-handed and does have a very good out pitch in his slider, and is effective against righties. I mean, he's a very useful piece, I think, for some team pushing toward the playoffs. I think there's going to be a surprise too. You know, I'm still not ruling out that Jonathan Villar could get traded. And he has done so well and looks like a guy who could last into the next good Brewers team, but I'm not certain that that's what's going to happen. It would help if Orlando Arcia has been a little better this year at AAA. He's been fine. He's been passable, but I don't want to call them rumblings, but there's some, maybe just some light concern about Orlando Arcia, and whether or not he's going to be able to make the jump and contribute right away at a high level. So, but I still think VR has shown enough that he's having a career type year right now, and they could maybe jump, strike while the iron is hot. And I think Chris Carter is still a strong possibility.
I was just going to say, hey, your boy Carter.
Yeah, a lot of teams are going to love that power, and that's not a commodity you can pick up off the street.
They have him for the next 2 years, though. That's the crazy part.
And that's attractive, though, to a team. A team that's going to say, well, we want him, but we don't want him just for 2 months. We want him to be here for longer and fairly cheap, I would say. So,
you know what? I'm going to add a third player in there that goes. I'm going to say some minor bullpen help, like somebody like a Blaine Boyer or something
like
that, too.
Yep. Absolutely agree with you.
Just somebody who needs that fifth player or sixth player out in the bullpen.
Yep. I agree with that. Yeah. Boyer's been nice. They've had a lot of good bullpen guys this year, and so much that, like, a guy like Michael Blazek, who I think they really were counting on, or Corey Knable, they can struggle, and it really isn't, it's not making it look like the bullpen's in tatters. They've just got a lot of depth right now. It's a pretty solid spot to deal from.
There we go.
JP, what's on Time Warner Cable Sports Channel this week?
Well, you'll never guess. There's Big Ten Media Day coverage.
Of course there is.
And then we also put a recap of the state baseball championship on there, and then Packers training camp, one-on-one from the Packers locker room, and then story on Mike McCarthy's opener from Monday. So that's all on Sports Weekly. There's a Timber Rattlers game on Wednesday night. What else is up this weekend? I think that is it until next week.
Cool.
More training camp. I mean, it is football to the max for the foreseeable future, because next week will be training camp and Big Ten Media Day, and then a story that I told you about that I might as well tease on here. One of our favorite coaches in all of sports ever is the one and only Clay Iverson. And he sent out a tweet a while back announcing the first McGuanago Moms Clinic. And I was very intrigued as to what that entailed. And I went out there last Friday, spent the day with the McGuanago football program and some of the moms of the McGuanago football program. So it was a fun kind of educational off the beaten path type thing that'll be on Sports Weekly next week.
At Lake Country Publications and Now Newspapers, it's going to be a pretty big week for us. Our websites are going to be changing pretty dramatically. I'm sure most people know that our company, the Journal Sentinel Company, was purchased by Gannett a while back, and we're going to sort of adopt the Gannett model for our websites. We're going to look a little bit like maybe the Post Crescent or Green Bay Press Gazette websites, if you're familiar with those. They are all now teammates of ours, so that's pretty cool. It's gonna look different. You should be able to still find stuff like my Preps Alcove, which this week is my annual Suburban 16, where I look at athletes that are currently active that graduated from high schools in our coverage area, and sort of keep track of what they're up to, and sort of rank them 1 through 16. I think maybe the biggest stars from our area are. There's of course a guy named JJ Watt at the top of the list. Not to spoil anything, but
is that TJ's older brother?
That's TJ's older brother. Oh, yeah. You might have heard of him. So assuming he can get healthy, he'll probably be number one for quite some time, I would think. So that's something to look for at the Preps Alcove. I just wrote a story this week, speaking of football, of a guy who's got some local connections to the Dousman Kettle Moraine area. He's going to be skydiving. He's part of the Army's Golden Knights skydiving into the Hall of Fame game, where the Packers will be playing the Indianapolis Colts on August 7th. He's part of the team that's going to be skydiving into there. He just, you know, dove into Yankee Stadium last weekend. So kind of a cool little story about a guy from our area. He ended up living most of his youth in Holman, Wisconsin, but a big Packers fan. He's going to get to do something pretty cool.
Beautiful. You do such good work, buddy. So proud of you.
And so do you, JP. I'm Aww. So proud of you when you take the time to actually talk to me.
There we go. I was just going to say, let's end this on a positive note, but you had to ruin it. So
Instead,
we will end it on that. So thank you for your time. Thank you for listening to the Initial Reaction Podcasts. Goodbye, friends.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
You're listening to Leaf Filter Radio, and the guru of gutter protection himself, Chris Counihan, is here to take your most pressing leaf-related questions.
Hey, everybody, Chris here. I understand we have Ron on the line. Ron, where are you calling from?
Uh-oh. Ron, are you calling from a ladder?
Well, I was. I wanted to ask Chris what I need to do to get my gutters ready to have leaf filter installed.
Oh, Ron, you don't have to do anything. A leaf filter trusted pro will come out and clean out your gutters, realign and seal your gutters, and install leaf filter, America's number one gutter protection system.
So I didn't need to get on this ladder?
Ron, leaf filter trusted pros are in your neighborhood and ready to help. Just visit leaffilter.com/day to schedule your free gutter inspection and get up to 30% off.
Thank goodness. What was that site?
That's leaffilter.com/day for your free gutter inspection today.
See representative for warranty details. Promotion is 20% off plus a 10% senior or military discount. One discount per household.